Okay, looks like 7 o'clock. Let's call the roll.
Beckett.
Here.
Bentel.
Here.
Coert. James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Richards. Sapp.
Here.
Smucker.
Here.
Weibel.
Here.
I entertain a motion to approve the agenda addendum.
So moved.
Moved by Jay.
Second.
Second by James. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Entertain a motion to approve the minutes of March 3, 2009.
So moved.
Moved by James. Second by Smucker. Discussion?
Yeah, there's one.
What's that?
One other thing. Let's see. I believe it's on page 2, third paragraph. When asked about solar power as an option, Mr. Stilinski stated he doesn't like solar thermal. I think he meant geothermal. That was what he said he didn't like for propane. Geothermal.
All right.
Okay. There's a typo too on page 4. I don't know if
we
do typos.
That's fine.
Third paragraph, fourth line, this UC stated there are
a lot of individual refrigerators. Okay.
Comment. Tiffany, is there any way you can number these off to the side?
Sure.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? As amended, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Without objection, we'll move item 9B, proposed easement for East Urbana Interceptor Sewer Project first. There being no objection. Mr. Little is here, Mike Little from the Urbana-Champaign Sanitary District. Do you want to describe the project? And
sure.
You got some handouts for us.
Yes. I don't have quite enough color copies for everybody, but.
You can just sit, Anna, you can sit right there. That's fine. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
What? I got an email from her. I thought she said.
My email hasn't been working, but so.
What I'm handing out are two sheets that show the overall project of the district is worth one, as well as the specific easement area that is on county property. The first sheet I'll refer to is this sheet right here.
Okay.
And the yellow line that you see represents the district's, what we call our East Urbana Interceptor Project. And this is a project that we're doing in cooperation with the city of Urbana. We're essentially 50-50 partners in this project, which will reconstruct the district's existing Myra pump station, which is located out on High Cross Road, move it several hundred feet to the south, deepen it, and increase its capacity for future growth east of High Cross Road. To make that all work, what we have to do is build a new interceptor sewer from that location, a force main from that location all the way along the yellow line that you see, all the way back to the district's northeast treatment plant. And to do that, obviously, in a lot of areas, we need easements. It can't be located on right-of-way. There's too many other utilities located there. And so what the district has proposed is a route and permanent and temporary easements along that route. And then if you'll refer to the second sheet, this illustrates the county property along East Main Street. And the orange line represents the force main that we would construct. And the yellow dashed lines represent the temporary and permanent easement lines that are necessary to construct that. So the force main is being located immediately south of the existing right-of-way, but therefore on county property is the proposed location. So what the district has done is we have had all of these various easement requirements appraised, and we're in the process of acquiring those easements. We have, in essence, all of the easements except the county's easement. We've acquired about 12 easements in this process, both permanent and temporary. The last one that we need to get completed is the one on the county property. So that's why I'm here tonight, is to talk about the requirements of that easement and the cost of that easement. We've had some discussions with Danny and with the county's engineer through this process, and have worked out, I believe, or close to, some final language that we can use in that document. There were a couple of comments, I believe, in your memo, Danny, regarding the final easement document. What I have done is, and I didn't bring enough copies for everybody, I apologize, but what I have done is I have taken the easement document that is in your packet and have actually added some language to it to address the final comments that were in the review memo. In essence, the district is willing to agree to those final comments in the easement document with two exceptions. There's a clause under paragraph C that says grantee will return the grantor's property to correct defects or other site features that were disturbed by construction for a period of 10 years. The district feels that 10 years is too long. We would propose 5 years. That even 5 years is a significantly longer period of time than is generally in these easements, but we understand the sensitive nature of the county's property, so we're willing to accept that 5-year period. 10 years, I feel, is so long that it's going to be difficult to determine, you know, was the defect caused by construction or was it caused by natural deterioration of what was there anyway. So we would be willing to accept a 5-year period for that correction. The other language that was asked for was having to do with response in emergency situations. If there's some type of emergency would arise during the course of construction, the district would be willing to compensate the county for any personnel time or any time responding to an emergency, not just normal observation of construction, but if there were an emergency of some kind that took place during the construction operation itself, we would be willing to cover that out-of-pocket cost as well.
Okay, that's subparagraph D. Is that language that Denny proposed in his memo?
Yes.
That you've accepted that language?
Yes.
Okay.
The other item having to do with the total easement fee, changing that terminology, total easement reimbursement fee, in paragraph E, is also a correction. It's fine. You can make
okay.
A correction as well.
All right. I did get an email from Dave DeThorne this afternoon indicating that he had reviewed the documents. He concurred with Denny's proposals, indicating that there were some policy decisions there, not necessarily legal decisions, for example, the 5-year, 10-year issue. And it seems to me the other issue that we have that should be open for discussion has to do with the cost. Now, I'm going to ask Mike about that in a second. But to get this on the table, could I get someone to move approval of the agreement with Urbana-Champaign Sanitary District for the sanitary sewer easement?
So moved.
Okay, moved by Mr. Bensel, second by Chair Weibel. Mike, you want to describe, you said that you've acquired 12 other easements in the process, and so those are from private property owners?
They are from very and sundry different people, several of them are private. One is from the Urbana Park District, one is from the Urbana School District, and the rest are from private individuals or private corporations.
Okay, and so did the same appraiser determine a value for all of those?
That's correct.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay, and so the next question is, did anybody else give you an easement for a dollar?
Yes, Menards Corporation that owns all of this property here,
okay,
and that tract, they granted the easement at no cost.
Okay, now will they hook onto this sanitary sewer and benefit from it if they develop it?
Not this particular sewer, no. This is a force main. Nobody can hook onto this force main. And the property that they purchased is actually already served by existing sewers. What we're doing with the new pump station is to make it larger and deeper so that it can serve further to the east. The areas off the west of High Cross Road are already served by the existing pump station.
Okay. How far east will you be able to go?
Most of the way to Cotton.
The next road is Cottonwood.
Cottonwood, excuse me.
Right. Cottonwood, okay. That would be the next section road, which is 70.
Almost, not quite all the way to Cottonwood. And then from 74 south to Windsor Road, and actually about a quarter mile south of Windsor Road, and then back west. About a half a mile, three-quarter mile back west and south of Windsor Road.
Okay.
It's about 3,000 acres.
So that everyone understands, the proposal is, do we give it to them for a buck, or do they pay us $23,000?
And the other component of that has to do with reimbursement of expenses. My understanding that the county has proposed that there's $18,800 of out-of-pocket expenses associated with this easement. So there's two components, as I understand it. There's the appraisal component, which is the value of the land, and then there's the out-of-pocket component that the county is claiming. So I want to make sure that it's clear that there's two components to this.
All right.
I would point out, I guess the district, this is a public project. The district is trying to do this. And, you know, while we understand costs, we certainly are willing to reimburse and make the county whole for any actual cost of this project. We would ask, the park district did not take any compensation for their reason.
Okay. On page 8081, of our packet is sanitary sewer easement conditions, and the back side has cost of the easement shall reimburse the county for its out-of-pocket costs due to this project. These costs include engineering consultant, on-site staff costs during construction, staff material costs for watering seed, long-term lawn restoration costs. Those total $18,800. Now, that's separate and apart from the $23,000.
I just want to make that clear that the district has the appraised value, which is what in essence would be the value as we would put on the easement. The county has claimed costs of $18,000.
I think the next question I'd want to know is, what's your funding source?
The funding source?
Yeah, where are you getting your money to? If you had to pay that $23,000, where would the money come from?
The $23,000 comes out of, half of it comes out of the district's revenues, and half of it comes from the city of Urbana. The project costs to build the project are being financed through a state revolving loan through the Illinois EPA. This is about an $8 million project. The district will borrow that money, pay it back over a 20-year period. The city of Urbana and the district sharing, each sharing roughly half of that amortization cost. The district's money to pay this loan back comes from the fees that the district assesses.
The motion that is on the floor approves the documents as they are currently written. So does that mean the motion that's on the floor has you paying $23,000 plus $18,800?
As the easement documents currently written, we're only offering $1.
Okay, gotcha. That's what I want to make sure everybody understood. Mr. Sapp.
Oh, okay. So that clears it up a little bit. What the motion on the floor means $1.
Plus $18,800.
Yes.
But my question is, if we were asking the 23.6, it gets passed on to the consumer, right? You say you're out there borrowing money, and so you've got to recoup that money somehow.
Yeah.
My other question is the $15,000 engineering consultant fee. If this project being done by the sanitary district, why do we have engineering fees? Wouldn't they engineer it through? I mean, are these truly county fees that we have to pay an engineer to do some work on this project?
Mr. Little and his group came to us with a proposal quite a long time ago on how to do the pipe, basically. And during that time, we were doing the fleet highway building. At that time, Burns Clancy was the civil engineer on it, and we took a look at it, and it was in conflict with that construction. They were asked to go back and take a look at their plans and kind of redo them, et cetera, et cetera. So through the course of time, Burns Clancy has assisted the county in their discussions with the sanitary district. It also includes that Burns Clancy would be on site like a typical construction project on behalf of the county. I believe it's 3 hours a week. And then they would also, in case of an emergency, it would also be there for the county. Because the type of decisions that are made here are not easily addressable internally.
So, and again, just to follow up, some of that $15,000, if I understood you correctly, has already been paid because Burns Clancy has already done some work on this.
We have held back the bills until the actual document was approved.
Okay.
And these are all the costs that we did. The $1,800 is Mr. Reinhardt for his on-site weekly visits. And then the rest is for the traditional land.
Like physical plant work, reseeding, et cetera. Mr. James?
Well, I was just curious, are you going to be doing any boring underneath? I saw some parking lots.
We're going to bore under the drives. Okay. We will directionally bore underneath the driveway, so we won't have to close any of the driveways.
And when you cross over underneath Main Street, are you going to
It's all directional bore.
Because I was, you know, that cost would run up having to recompact.
Well, the disruption.
And the disruption.
The disruption is the main thing. Cost-wise, there's a lot of difference, but trying to close Main Street, trying to close one of these driveways, it was obviously a big concern, and so we worked out a way of handling that without having to do.
And then the other, I saw there's some cost, which is minimal, but if I understood you right, you said that you were going to maintain that area for, you're proposing 5 years. But does that include seeding and leveling? And
the contract will restore the area and have a one-year guarantee. Beyond that, then, is the district has agreed to a total of 5 years from the acceptance of the project, which would be when the contractor's one-year guarantee period would start. For 5 years, we will agree to correct defects. It could become a little bit of a question as to, you know, are we responsible for doing this or responsible for doing that? But generally, we'll take on the responsibility of the ground settles. Obviously, if there's a problem with the utility that we restore, like a drain pipe or something, we'll take care of that for that 5 year period. I don't know how much I want to guarantee how good the seating is going to turn out. I mean, a lot of that depends upon we have pretty stringent standards that we put in the contract as to what the contractor has to provide. But we're not sodding it in this case. We are seating it. So
It takes a little cooperative effort, a little watering, and that the contractor responsible for establishing it, getting going. But in terms of defects, I mean, true things that would show up as defects, sinkholes, utility problems, that type of thing, the district has agreed for 5 years to take care of those.
And I just want to say, I think it's great when two entities or three or how many ever get involved that can work together and work it out, you know, the best possible cost. That's what it's all about.
I agree.
Any other discussion? Chair Weibel.
What about 6 year, you know, sinkhole forming? I mean, so you're going to pension, you see, find out what's going on. Who pays for it then?
After 5 years?
Yeah.
Well, at that point, it would be the property owner's responsibility.
Well, let's say the main.
Oh, the main is our responsibility. Okay. It's always our responsibility. The force main itself, whatever we install there, is always our responsibility. All I'm saying is that the construction restoration that takes place through the property, and we put some pretty stringent requirements. This isn't dig a hole and dump the dirt bag. This requires compactive effort. I mean, there's more significant effort required through these finished areas to try and ensure that we don't end up with any of those unsightly problems.
Mr. Betzel, then Mr. Jay.
I'm looking, but I'm probably not seeing it in here. As it was written and moved, is it saying 5 years or 10 years in here?
This one says 10.
And they're proposing 5.
They're proposing
so,
5.
So if we wanted to give him the 5, we would need to amend the motion, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Runs on page 107 to the right number.
Okay.
We moved based on Denny's memo. And he indicated to me that he changed Denny's memo from 10 to 5. He agreed with D and he agreed with E.
Okay.
So am I correct?
Yes.
That's pretty much where we are.
That's correct.
So you agree with A and B.
I wasn't really sure what you were asking for. If you want to propose some different language about, I looked at that and I wasn't sure what to say other than the one.
All I know is I got an email from Dave DeThorn. He said he was fine.
Okay.
So that's my
turn. And on B, I did agree. We'll add the county's consultants, county staff, and attendants.
Mr. Jay?
Just for clarification, I know that generally you like to go in as straight a line as you can. Is there a reason you picked Main Street as opposed to the Penn Central right-of-way that's north of there? It would have been a straight shot up to there and over.
The railroad right-of-way, we're running east and west. We have issues as we get further to the east. There were limitations in terms of access and the amount of space that was available. And the railroad's charging us $25,000 just to cross under the tracks. The cost of trying to locate on their right of way, and that's Norfolk and Southern, and the cost to try and locate on the right of way, we didn't need to explore with them because of the license fee they were charging.
So this isn't necessarily the straightest and most efficient way. This is the least expensive way.
Well, it's both. In terms of distance, it's about as short as we can make it. In terms of cost, it's the most cost-effective way.
Any other discussion? Call the roll. Oh, sorry, Mr. Bethel, go ahead.
Yeah. I guess personally, I'm kind of in agreement with Mr. Little. I think the 10 years is probably too long. I would like to amend this to 5 years.
Okay, there's a motion to amend the proposal on the floor to a, what's the phrase I want to use, 5-year
warranty
period. Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. On the main motion, any further discussion? Call the roll.
Benzel?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Jay?
No.
Sapp?
Yes.
Smucker.
Yes.
Weibel.
Yes.
Beckett.
Yes. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And Anna, I can't ever remember your last name. Okay. Without objection, we'll move the news rec ordinance, news rec agreement up on the agenda. And Mr. Coroner, we'll move you up too.
It's
okay. Okay. Right. That's fine. We met last Thursday out at the courthouse. If you look at page 67 and 68, what I want to try to do is sort of show you where this is. Okay. Where's my, here's the parking lot, and here's the one-armed bandit in here, where we put that cover over the parking, and this is right here, and the news rack runs east and west, and it faces out to Main Street. The sheriff liked this location because he felt that people would not just stop right here in the street and run up and get a newspaper. Instead, they would turn into the parking lot because of the short distance between where the news rack is and the parking here. And then Pat Paletti said, yeah, and then they'll pull in the handicap spot and we'll get them for $250. So that's good. Everybody's happy. So anyway, but that's a location. Then the secondary location that we talked about, if there was something wrong with this one, was right here running north and south, immediately adjacent to this planter area here. But Alan, you check these out, and really that our primary location, the one we like the best, works. Is that right? There's no utilities or anything under there. And what they'll do is actually just bore into the concrete that is there and set the new stand in place. They don't have to tear any concrete out there to pour any footings or do anything like that. Does anybody have any question about where it's located? Okay. Is there anything, Anna, that you can think of that we talked about? That do you want to describe this again? Do you want to?
Sure. I'll just introduce myself again. I'm Anna Hochelder. I'm the City of Urbana Public Arts Coordinator. And this was a project that was initiated by the city when we identified some concerns with the existing newspaper racks that are located on Elm and Broadway on the corner. And we requested proposals from various artists and have selected a design that you received in your packet at the last month's meeting. And we hope to work with the county to place it in the front of the plaza. We think it would be more accessible and be more aesthetically pleasing. And so I think we've worked with the county and city on the intergovernmental agreement that you see before you, addressing various concerns.
Okay. The sheriff was also present for that meeting. The sheriff is satisfied with the agreement. One of his concerns was, because you're talking about news racks and newspapers, there have been people who've been sued over whether or not they had access. The city has agreed to indemnify the county from any responsibility for that. It's the city's project. They're putting up all the money to pay for the news rack and maintain it over the period of time covered by the agreement. If for some reason something comes up, we have to have it moved. That's covered in the agreement as well. Again, my email from Dave DeThorne today. He was at the meeting the other day. This is acceptable to him. Let's make sure that you all know that. So to get it on the table, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved by James, second by Smucker. Discussion. Chair Weibel.
How many newspapers, different newspapers can you hold?
When we begin to fabricate, we will look to see if we need to expand it. But we have a limited space of 15 feet.
Well, I said that, and I noticed that, and I said that the other day, and Pat reminded me that there are, these aren't just paying papers, these are free papers and real estate, right, real estate booklets and things like that. It isn't just news, because I said the same thing. Aren't we getting less newspapers, not more newspapers, Mr. James?
Well, when you hit on the overall upkeep and maintenance of it, I was just going to say, who would that fall under? I mean,
Urbana.
Okay, but I mean, if we have a complaint and they haven't taken any action, we should have somebody that would have the authority, power, whatever you want to call it, without coming to a facilities meeting to say, hey, we need to get this cleaned up and done now without having to.
Well, I would assume that our physical plant director would be responsible to work with Urbana to make sure that things like that got addressed, wouldn't you?
Well, that's what my thought, but yeah. You know how it goes sometimes. Yeah. Everybody's afraid to say anything, just like the one armed bandit.
Mr. Jay.
Is there any cost at all for that, to the county for this? Is this going to be totally taken care of by the city of Urbana? We don't have to worry about it. We won't have an engineer there watching.
No. No, we don't have any costs. Thanks, Denny. I think that's fine. Mr. Smucker.
Are the newspapers or the magazines, whatever, going to be put in there, are they being charged for the court, or is it a free service?
We're going to be using a modular rack that's used in various cities. And the design that's being used modifies a rack that's used in various cities that have a uniform appearance. So there's an option to have both paying racks and free paying papers and free papers. And that's something that we're going to be looking at other cities and how they manage that.
But if there is any revenue, it's your revenue, it's not our revenue, right? So we don't have to keep track of that either. Other questions? Call the roll.
Bensel?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Maybe.
Yes.
Sapp?
No.
Smucker?
Yes.
Weibel?
Yes.
Beckett?
Yes. Motion carries. Let's do that. Let's go ahead and do 9C, which is the issue concerning conceptual approval of the relocation of County Morgan and Coroner Office operations to the Gill Building. Mr. Inman and Mr. Northrup. Thank you.
Okay.
So this will be on the agenda April 23rd. And when's it on your agenda?
I'll let you know.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. How we got to this point, I guess, is recently I visited Denny and expressed to him some complications we were having at the coroner's office regarding handling the decedents that were coming into the coroner's office. It's been going on for quite some time, but I noticed after the first of this year we had a substantial increase in the type of cases, and what I'm referring to is indigent cases and cases where we have no family members. They may not be 100% indigent, but if they don't meet a certain financial level or threshold, they might as well be indigent because they end up being left for the county to deal with, so to speak. So one of the complications I ran into, normally the county, we do everything we can in the coroner's office to locate family next to kin and get somebody to take care of these cases whenever possible. On average, we do 1 to 2 cases a year prior to this year. This year, since January 1st, I've done 4 cases already, and I expect that number to decline significantly. In doing that, it's a little bit different when the county or when my office has to arrange for these cases to be handled, whether it be burial, cremation. There's legal hoops I have to jump through. I can't just go out and do it right away. In general, it's taking me about 30 to 60 days per case to get those finalized if they fall on the county or on my office. And that's where we got into this storage or containment issue with refrigerated storage. For years now, the coroner's office had a three-person, three-body cooler refrigeration unit that we house in a local funeral home to keep people in or keep cases in until we either can get them autopsy or get them their final disposition arranged. Twice or three times now since January 1st, I have had 5 people sitting there in the facility waiting for us to either take care of and get the final legal issues cleared up or find the next of kin. We always try and find the next of kin first. That can take us a month easy. It's just hard to find people these days. Nobody has a home phone anymore. You know, they don't want to be found in most cases. So what has happened is, thankfully, earlier in the year it was cold enough, the facility we had, that some of these people we were able to keep outside of the refrigeration unit. This is probably not something that most of you have thought about or want to hear, but unfortunately that's what we had to do. I had five people in our facility and I could only hold three. So
they were still inside though, right?
Yes. Our facility's in a secure building that has a security system on it. So only people with access to that security system can get into that building without being known or discovered that they are in there. The problem is, as the temperatures get warmer, that's not a possibility anymore because refrigeration helps slow the process after death. And what can happen is within a matter of just a couple hours, a body or a person can change significantly if they're not refrigerated. And the higher the temperature is, the quicker it can go. The facility they're in has no air conditioning other than our three-person refrigeration. It has heat in there, which is usually down in the wintertime, but the temperatures in the facility, it's a garage, basically. The temperatures in the summertime can easily surpass 90 to 100 degrees in the garage. So that concerned me. I think some of this has to do with the financial status of the economy that we're seeing this as well. Family members, you know, some people don't realize this, but when someone dies, if it's not a spouse, there's really no legal obligation for a family member to pay for arrangements or to handle those arrangements. They can say, basically, I don't want to be involved in it, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing an increase in some cases here since the first of the year, and we will continue to see that. So I came to Denny and expressed my concerns about this, what we were going to do, because I also have some concerns. There are some statutes that deal with, for lack of a better term, that's quoted as abusing a corpse or so forth. My concern is that if we're not taking care of these corpses or deceased individuals as well by either providing the proper, you know, storage until we can handle their disposition, you know, are we meeting our obligation also to family? If family does show up or come forward later, or even if the family's there and doesn't want to handle it, though, and it's left to us, are we doing it the way we should be doing it? So I expressed my concerns and you know, requests to try and look into some other options, and that's where we got to, along with that, just the facility in general and what we're doing there. And Denny and I spoke about some options, which I wasn't aware of, that he suggested we look at regarding the Gill building and maybe possibly moving our operation to that facility. Along with that, Denny approached Carl because I mentioned that I've been working with the state of Illinois on disaster preparedness and response for multiple fatalities in whatever event it would be. And in our plans, we call for space and refrigerated trailers and so forth. But here at our facilities, we don't really have a place to put those that's in close proximity of our office as well. So we looked at the Gill building and some options there, as well as Denny spoke to Carl. And I don't know if you want me to cover that as far as the cooler, the refrigeration. He asked me to get him some options with refrigeration units. And he spoke to Carl about possibly using some grant money that they receive either through Homeland Security, wherever they're getting their grant money, and possibly looking into purchasing a refrigeration unit for the county with the understanding that we would house it. I guess it would be purchased for the county. But in conjunction with that, concerns that Carl has had when we've met with these mass fatality incidents is, what's Carl going to do with the people that end up at Carl in one of these events and end up dying and becoming coroner's responsibility again? So again, it's my understanding, Denny can elaborate on this, that Carl, the people he spoke to at Carl, were enthused about this idea, that if we were willing to, which technically it would probably fall to us regardless by default, but if they're willing to work with us, we have some options that they may be willing to purchase a large refrigeration unit for us if we have a place to put it. And then in conjunction with that, if we can get my operation close to that facility or in the same building would make things run a lot smoother. And then I'll toss or punt to Denny on the rest of the information.
When we looked at other options, one option was the old morgue in the old nursing home, currently housing Ilias. The issue in the basement, which is where it's located, we had two. One was flooding, and the second was the height of the ceilings. The height of the ceilings were prohibitive from a, I would just call it a general construction morgue unit. You would have to customize it, basically. It would then divide it into two or three different areas, and it just, although we had the space, it just wasn't, it was going to cost more than ultimately what we believe the Gill building will be. The way the units, the refrigeration units are constructed, they come almost like a prefab, bring them, deliver them to the site, hook them up. They have their own folks to do that, and you're off and running. You put the security on it, so only coroner and his staff have access to it, and you have your morgue unit. No autopsies, nothing else, just storage of bodies and bodily fluids if the coroner goes there. All the inquests, all the other meetings that would take place in other satellite areas that we mentioned within here would all be within the envelope of the Gill building. And after reviewing the site as it is currently now, I believe, I don't speak too much for Duane, but I think we're both in concurrence that this is probably the epitome plan of the space available currently.
So, you're all for this?
Yes. I went and met with Danny over at the Gill building. We looked. Currently, there's office space over there I wasn't aware of. I didn't even know what was in the building, actually. We went over. He met me. We took a look. I noticed there were what is actually the ideal number of office spaces if we would require a need for our office. As it turns out right now, I have two people who share a small office, and I have one that uses an office that I think, you know, might technically not qualify for a closet, but if, you know, it's a small office. It has room enough in there for all our files, our receptionist area, our storage area that we actually have between the room we have in our office now and a room we have in another part of this building. Size-wise, I think it can fit into one of the rooms that's there. It really has good potential, great potential to meet all our needs with the exception of autopsies. We wouldn't be doing autopsies there. And I've expressed my concern before that we don't have a facility for families to come and view their loved ones either. When we do have families that want to be, you know, involved or whatever, I believe that affords us, or this option affords us that opportunity as well based on the current layout and structure of the Gill facility.
I just have a point of order, and I don't know. Is the agreement that you're working on with Carl addressed in this recommendation as well? And the reason why I ask that is I oversee part of that department that would be providing the funds for that.
Right. I think right now the only thing we're talking about is agreeing on the concept so that we can move forward and develop specific plans, identify costs. It sounds like there would be some county build-out here, am I correct?
Correct.
That our physical plant would be doing, as opposed to, you know, hate to say the word, we're going to need an architect to get in there and divide that space.
It should be fairly minimal. I went and looked at it. I took pictures of it so that I could reference it to what we need now and how it would lay out. And it is, I mean, it's kind of contingent on the fact that whether we can get...
Okay, let the record reflect, no architect is needed. Mr. James?
Well, that was going to be some of my questions, but if I didn't, Linda Frank tell us she was using some storage over there or wanted to use some storage over there when we toured her facility?
Small claims, closed files. She wants to move there, but, I mean, there's so much storage space
okay, well,
there.
I'm just asking.
I mean, obviously, in approving this concept, we're going to look at the overall building and see what's the use of the building. Now, as I drove by there, I saw that the work's been done to the south garage. Looks like the exterior work's just about done, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and so do you know when we're going to...
We're waiting for the county clerk to give input on the final interior remodel.
Okay.
And really, there is minimal to do. It's just to make sure that the office, the access to the existing offices that are there meet his approval and et cetera. We have some work to do on the floor to cover up where the jacks were, like all the jacks, want to paint it, and that's pretty much where we're at.
Well, if we approve this concept, when would we have the details?
In May, because the grant, in conversations with Carl, the grant approval of the grant would be at the end of April. So it comes to May, and let you know exactly how much we received, what that unit would be like, and then we could, at the same time, give you an itemized list of what we know is what it would take to make the space habitable for the corner. I know we need to do some foundation work. We probably need to paint, and I think we need to do some work on the front entry and maybe some locks. And that's pretty much the extent that I know at this particular time.
Mr. Northrup.
The other thing, when we went and looked at this, that really addresses, I think, what was appealing to the people that Denny spoke to, Carl, is, for one that I liked, is it has multiple overhead doors, one right near where the refrigeration unit would be located inside the warehouse part of this building. We would have the ability to back our vehicles inside to load and unload, between inclement weather and if there were any spectators around for whatever incident. There's two loading docks for semi-trailers, actually three, but two that the semi-trailers can back right down to. In the event that Champaign County would have some major catastrophe, whether man-made or terrorist or whatever, we have the ability to bring the deceased individuals to that facility and cycle through, whether it be from the hospital, from the scene, whatever, which was something that we talked to them about. So those are some of the other advantages to it.
Mr. Benson.
A couple things. I would assume that this building has sufficient power supply in there, and would we be looking at any major expense at getting power supply to these units?
At this time, I don't believe so. It was a production facility with two different separate production areas, and we should be fine. Once again, we need to sit down with the board unit itself. That one would be the only question.
Okay.
The office area is fine.
Okay. All right. And so I would assume when it comes back to us in May, there would be something more than the term in here, minimal cost to the county.
Yes. We would give you a project list of those tasks that we feel would be required to do it and costs associated with it.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. James.
That's Ron here on that. I was going to ask about the electrical service to it, and then also you said something about security, so I imagine you're going to need some type of security system there. And then has anybody looked at the roof yet? Well, when you do, would you please, because that always seems to be an add-on to most things.
We need to take a look at the lease, Mr. James, on that.
Okay.
Specifically.
Okay.
Mr. Smucker.
Why can't you do autopsies there? Where do you do autopsies now?
In Bloomington. We actually do them at the coroner's office in Bloomington. We currently don't have any facilities that are set up to do autopsies in. We just haven't had them. We don't have pathologists locally to do them. And to be honest with you, at this point, my honest opinion is if we did have facilities, we probably wouldn't have a pathologist to do it. The pathologists don't like to travel, and unless we want to pay the pathologists their going rate. Right now, the pathologists in Illinois are doing autopsies out of central locations for multiple counties. Mm-hmm. And we are surrounded right now between Kankakee, Bloomington, Springfield, and Terre Haute, Indiana, with pathologists. So even to have one come into this area to do autopsies, the caseload wouldn't be sufficient enough at this point, I don't believe, to bring them in to cover their expenses.
So it's cheaper to ship them over to Bloomington and ship
right.
them to the
state. Right. We pay a fee to them to use their facility to do the autopsy, and their pathologist does the autopsy for us.
Okay. I think your direct question, Mr. Sapp, was should I abstain? And I guess out of an abundance of caution, you probably should. Okay. Don't you think?
I think, are you working with a need on this? Or
yes.
Chair
Wiley.
What's the building currently being used for?
We have currently the administrative area and a small portion of the large bulk storage area is used by the county clerk for election equipment and supplies. That would be transferred to the South Highway. Right. Currently we have, I I think it's 1,800, I'm sorry, it's a little bit more than that, maybe 2,500 square feet for ideas. And what's commonly referred to as the glue room is a room set aside where they put their seminar information, that kind of thing, where they assemble it. They also have some first responder equipment that is in transit to someplace else. In addition, you store, I believe it's 2 emergency response trailers and corresponding pickup truck for my latest. Then we have some of the masonry project materials in there, the stone, that type of thing, and then balances, physical plans, equipment, the carpets, landscaping equipment, and that type of thing, the wood shop.
There is there stuff that you allowed every in order to do this, that presumes?
I don't believe so at this point. No. Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. We also have some access equipment from the nursing home, which we are going to remove from there.
Of course, the masonry project stuff will be gone too.
Right.
The other question is, two more questions. One, will this impact the current lease?
Upon approval of this, we want to meet with Mr. Tom Harrington of Fair Properties and show him the plan and make sure he's fully aware of what that is. The way the lease is constructed right now, I do not believe so. But I want to be upfront with him about it.
And the other question is, I would presume that we'd see an increase in utility costs since we're going from primarily storage to a everyday use facility.
It's open it's open normal business hours. I would just suggest to you 7:30 to 5 on a daily basis, Monday through Friday. But you're right, there. Yes, sir.
Oh,
yes. But yes, there probably will be an increase now. We're going to have to find something to figure out what the market is.
Any further discussion, Mr. Jay?
When we got into the Gale building, we weren't sure that we were going to have that permanently, and it looks like to me we're slowly slipping into a permanent situation, the more reliance that we depend on that. I actually concur that the corner needs more space for the coolers. I'm adamantly opposed to Morgan. He knows that, and he's not asking for that tonight, but I'm not opposed to the coolers. I'm just not sure if we want to make this commitment to this building that don't belong to us. And at some point, our long-range plans that keep not getting developed, we need to be talking about corner space and about where we want this morgue and our storage space. I think as opposed to we just continue to move somebody out, and I don't think it's a very efficient use of the facility anyway. And what does it cost us for that Gale building a year?
$70,000.
That's a lot of money for a building. Although, God forbid, I don't blame Harvard. I have some concerns with our commitment to that building.
Well, I have a question. And what's your solution to the problem?
Well, we've had a couple opportunities, and we keep moving around. I'm not sure why this couldn't have been facilitated in some of the highway buildings when we had some available right here in this remodeling project for the coroner and sheriff. I'm thinking that the coroner could have had a bay in that fairly easily. Now, the sheriff may not have got all he wanted, and the clerk may not got all he wanted, but there was certainly room to put this in there, and it would have been close to the offices.
I don't remember you making that motion.
I don't remember that being on the table either, by the way. But we also committed ourselves to some storage for Ilias that I never knew anything about.
It's in the lease.
Well, that wasn't discussed in this facility when I was here anyway. Now, maybe I wasn't here when you done it. But my point is, we've had opportunities to do it, and we didn't do it. Now we're committing ourselves to another bigger, better project. And of course, we're flush with money in this county, so that's not a problem.
Well, I actually think what we're committing ourselves to is to look at it.
Well,
that's what we're committing ourselves to. And I don't know what to tell this man. Ever since he's been in office, and I've been chair of this committee, I don't know how many meetings I've had with this man in which he said, help. And I've never been able to say, Dwayne, I can do something for you. I really haven't. He's been tucked away here and tucked away there.
I
just don't think it's fair to his office He's an elected official. We have the responsibility to support him and support him in an efficient way. And blaming it on future planning or whatever else you want to do, I just disagree with you, John. We got to respond to
it. I ain't blaming him. I'm just saying we're not doing our job. And by the way, he did.
I think I am doing my job.
He did inquire about this highway bill. He did, by the way.
Oh, I know he did. Mr. Northrup.
Just for an add-on to this, the cooler that we looked at, and Denny asked me to start looking at coolers and see what it would cost. We looked at it, and there are ones, and the ones that I looked at, these are actually made. They can sit outside. Now, the complication with that is security and so forth. But they are made. You know, some of them sit outside. And the possibility, if for whatever reason, if we were to move into that building and have to move out, if you take out the offices and the desks, you know, all that stuff in the office area, this cooler can be moved wherever. It just has to be disconnected. All the refrigeration unit and everything is on the cooler. It just has to be hooked up to electricity, either hardwired, you know how it is. So if we were in that building and it was decided that the county wasn't going to lease that building anymore for whatever reason, that we would have the complication, as you said, then we'd have to find office space for us again and a place to put the cooler. But we could move the cooler, just, you know, depending on which one we got.
Mr. Smucker.
But two things, do they make Energy Star push on the
Actually, they. I don't know about Energy Star, because I told Denny when I was researching them, some of them mentioned that they were, it was either high efficiency or energy compliant in some form or another, but I'm not familiar with what all those things mean.
No.
But
there's actually not an Energy Star rating for more equipment yet.
But there is, I mean, but this, that information is available. Just, I would encourage you to consider that. You do, because these things are going to be, the power for these are going to be big. But I actually want to go back and just ask what Mr. Jay raised. Is there any other alternative for build-outs on other buildings or place space where we can construct a small building? Or, you know, if we're paying $70,000 a year down the road, how many years down the road is it that we haven't bought ourselves a building anyway?
First question, Ms. Busey, what's our lease commitment? How long do we have to be in this?
I think we're at the point where we could get out of it if we needed to. There's also an option to purchase the building with the lease.
All right, do we have any money for a capital project?
No.
What would the purchase cost be of a building like that?
Well, that's something that we probably, I believe that this, that Mr. Harrington would be interested in a lease purchase for the county as well. So there's probably some flexibility if we determined that we wanted to need to have this, making this one of our buildings.
It sounds, I don't know the building well, I've seen it, but it sounds like the building's not ideal in general, or am I wrong about that?
It's a pretty good building. Yeah. I've been in there.
And there are significant storage needs that many county offices have, and it's certainly good for building.
Any other discussion, Mr. James?
Well, I was just going to follow up on Mr. Jay. I think that's one thing that when we do discuss these, I'm not saying we got to act on them, but it'd be something to have discussion on, sort of look at our, like hearing some of these figures tonight. I've been on this board for a while, and that's the first time I've heard, you know, what the cost was and what we're looking at and some of the needs. And we've heard this all throughout. And I know everybody wants to be here in Urbana near this great campus, but there are other buildings within our county that would serve this need that would be relatively inexpensive, and they could probably be bought and need very, I know, and I'm just going to speak freely here, in Rantoul, they had a nice cold storage building that Mr. Northrup could have stored most of the people from Urbana or Champaign in, and the building was in good shape and has been bought by a company that now uses it for other things. I don't know why everybody's so worried about driving or windshield time, and with the technology we have nowadays to send a fax and pick up the cell phone, that we can't look outside of this campus or other areas for something that's decent and suits the needs. We all have to drive when we go to work. We all have to drive when we come to the meetings. So that ought to be on the table when we have these discussions, not all of us.
Entertain a motion to approve the concept of relocating coroner's office to the Gill building with a report back in May to detail the costs and options. Is there a motion? Okay, first I need to get a motion on the floor.
I'll move. Second.
All right, moved by Bensel, second by James. Mr. Smucker.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize we had moved it.
No, that's why I did.
Then I won't make the amendment. I just want to ask another question. How much of a difficulty would it be, how much of a burden on your operation would it be to locate outside of the city, like Mr. James suggesting, to a place like Rantoul, which is, what, 20 miles away?
For us, it actually would be pretty difficult because a large number of the cases that we handle are in Carlin, Provena. Mm-hmm. And so if we were located, and in Champaign-Urbana in general, if we were located in Rantoul,
it means you're driving back.
Right, we would be driving back on a daily basis, probably at least once, you know, or twice. You know, I can see where that would be. That's the biggest complication for something like that. I mean, my personal opinion is the coroner's office itself and its operation should be somewhere in Champaign-Urbana, mm-hmm, or close to it, because that's a majority of our caseload. I mean, the outlying cities provide us, you know, a fair number of cases, but overall, it's, I mean, not to offend anybody from Carl, but Carl provides me plenty of business.
Any further discussion?
I mean, I'll just say that I have a preference to finding the corner a permanent building to be in, as opposed to a rental, and maybe that's not possible right now, but you know, we're going to do a lot of work to move them in there, and then maybe in 2 years move them out. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to hear alternative possibilities, I guess. I don't obviously have them, but maybe somebody smarter,
well,
more knowledgeable than I do.
I've only been the chair since 2000. I've only studied this thing 3-4 times, and the same answer has come up every time. We don't have any money. We have no way of getting any money. There's no coroner tax. There's no consumer tax. There's no fee we can charge. I know of no other way. I'm open to suggestion. I mean, I recognize that perhaps my long-range planning isn't the best, but right now I see a problem, and I'd like to resolve the problem. Mr. Inman.
The next golden opportunity is when and if you expand the satellite jail to bring corrections, the correctional center and the sheriff's office out here. That is your next golden opportunity. It could be incorporated into that facility. They have some similar issues and work together on some.
Yeah, I'm thinking about all those county board members that will vote for bed space in jails. Yeah. Okay.
That's your.
I understand. Any further discussion? Let's see if we can move the agenda along. Mr. Northam.
Sorry, I just want to say to you, it's compared to $70,000 a year, it's not much, but we do pay $2,400 a year to have our current cooler where it's located now as a lease fee, plus the lease that I pay, or the rental fee I pay at the Civic Center for the inquest and the meetings that we have there. So total, I mean, it's not a lot, maybe $3,000 to $4,000, but that's something that wouldn't be.
Right. Well, but that $70,000 isn't all you.
Right.
That's all county uses. Okay, Chair Weibel.
What else possible if I did to do some research to see what a lease purchase might cost us to get rid of that year, mm-hmm, without actually, you know, I don't know if there's a legal enforcement on that.
Call the roll.
Spencel?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Jay?
No.
Sapp?
Abstain.
Smucker?
Yes.
Weibel?
Yes.
Beckett?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. North.
Thank you.
All right, now we're back to the top of the agenda. We have the project spreadsheet from the Masonry Beltrar project on page 8. Accept a motion to receive it and place it on file.
So moved.
Moved by Benson, second by Weibel. Discussion. Deb, and have we, so this now reflects the reporting that we had discussed?
No, because those expenses are not being, we need to work with the architect because they're supposed to be reporting which portions of the tower expenses are the Citizens Committee obligation and which portion are the county's obligation, and we don't have a real clear answer from them at this point on how that is being
done. Okay. So we've got correct total expenses, but we don't have an allocation between,
right,
tower projects.
Total expenses are correct, but we don't have, and my understanding from talking with Evelyn, who's
cut with them is that that is probably going to be done at the end of the project when they can tie, you know, which expenses were to go with which of those initiatives. So it's the total project budget at this point.
Other questions?
Just because I can't remember, what was the estimated split?
I believe it's
1.15 million
is Clock and Bell Tower Committee responsibility.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I had asked Denny to talk with the architect about is because we had significant contingent funds, you know, contingencies because of the you're building up and it's a somewhat historic building. And it was clear that when we made the savings on the foundation that we saved some money there, and it looks like the project's going pretty smooth. And so we may be, I hate to say this, it's almost like St. John Jay saying we don't need an architect, but we may be significantly under budget. Then how do you allocate that if you're under budget between the two? We have to figure that out too. The architect's got to help us there too. Okay. Yeah, Mr. Smock.
Just a question. Has the Citizens Committee, have they raised the amount of money they said they were going to raise? How close are they?
They've raised 900 and...
20,000 something in that. Right in the
Right. So they're still $200,000 short. Other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Public Defender and South Corridor Remodel, Mr. Inman.
You should have a 11 by 17 drawing of your place. The drawing was photocopied for your agenda.
Oh, it's not the right one.
You lost the definition of it, so I copied it for you.
Yes.
With the north to the top, this shows the new north egress. Then moving down, you have the station whereby the jurors come in and check in with the individual for jury assembly. What you would find is existing where was a storefront in this particular area. This storefront will be relocated down towards the main corridor.
Where number four is?
I have to admit, Steve, I can't read it. I can't see it.
Where number four is.
Right. And then additionally, the door that is currently the one of the entrances to Public Defender would be relocated to the new main entrance to the Public Defender.
Number six.
Number six. Public Defender would place, create a lobby. If you've been by the Public Defender's office, you've noticed some wooden chairs sitting in the existing south corridor. That's where that would take place. They would have three stations there for administrative staff to work there. The area where they vacated from the main entrance, which is to your right on the extreme right part of the drawing, could be used for storage, it could be used in case they ever expand for additional office space, etc. One additional item, the current south entrance to the old courthouse would be reconfigured. It would have a security door on it, would be emergency egress only. Currently it's emergency egress only, but storefront. That would be blocked in and then meet the sheriff's criteria for security, and a security door would be there. So if you had an emergency and you had jury assembly occupied, those folks would emergency egress to the north. If people were using the exhibit or for any other function in this large lobby area, they would egress that in that direction. People coming from the third and the second floor, state's attorney's office and probation, would come down. There is a corridor adjacent to the build-out area, and they would egress through the south. Also, the clients and the public defender's office would egress through the south area. and that's pretty much the plan. We're reusing almost all the items. We're building permanent walls, basically, is what we're doing. We'll use our minority contractor to complete, I would suggest, approximately half of that work. Relocation of a couple of sprinkler heads, and we're pretty much done.
What's the out-of-pocket cost?
At this particular time, I don't have a definitive figure. I can give you a range on that. We do not believe that if it's over $20,000, we'll be shot because we're reusing almost everything. It's all in labor.
Okay. Well, we have to do the emergency egress in the north. That was a building safety thing or life safety thing.
Right.
And so why do we have to do all the others?
If this becomes the public defender space and we do have security on there, then you need something. And I can't remember the number you said that was. We need that door across.
Number six.
And according to the building codes and life safety codes, et cetera, that's the way this is drawn. With, in fact, Randy occupying this particular area. Randy needs the space because he is pretty much cramped. This will solidify his organization. As you know, the corridor sits here, and they have to transcript or come across here to
from one office to the other.
Right. So that's the benefit to Randy on this particular project.
Okay. Questions, Mr. Jay?
I assume this met code when we started screwing around and making the different modifications. I mean, I'm sure it did because we paid architects and engineers to figure this out for us, so I'm sure that it met code at some point in time.
So why? What has caused us to
this wall right here?
All of this is because of this wall right there.
Correct. And Randy needs that wall with the security in order to have these folks occupy that. Yes, court records.
And follow up, if I could, why wasn't that included to start with?
Because I think Randy brought it up after the fact.
That's a good reason.
I mean, he requested more space, and the only way to get him more space was to create this wall in the corridor that we could come up with.
There is no other space.
Yeah, I mean...
Chair Weibel.
Who will do the work?
Percentage-wise, just in generalities, half would be by our minority contractor, Jones and Jones. The other part would be by Westler Construction.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Is there a motion to approve?
Mm-hmm.
Moved by Sapp. Second? Second by Smucker. Call the roll. I feel like I have two roll call votes every time.
Bensel?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Jay?
No.
Sapp?
Yes.
Smucker?
Yes.
Weibel?
Yes.
Beckett?
Yes. Roof replacement.
You should have a memo from me dated April 3rd entitled Green Initiative for House Roof Replacement. Along with that comes a drawing that shows the elevation of the courthouse with the post light on top. When we were last met in March, we discussed this somewhat about replacing the shingles on the roof. And basically, there are two reasons that you would want to consider this. Number one is to upgrade the energy efficiency of the courthouse roof itself by replacing the existing shingles with Energy Star rated shingles and applying a light EPDM reflective coating on the rubber membrane to reduce the energy cost. The second reason you would want to consider this is the existing shingles that are on that roof are experiencing what I would call a drastic reduced life cycle cost in the fact that we have now, this is our third project on that affecting that roof. We had the courthouse addition where we had to demolition. I'm sorry, let me even back up before that. We had to do roof work to bring the west wall back under the the envelope of the roof so we could even start the demolition on the courthouse addition. Then we, once we completed that, we were into the remodel of the courthouse, in which we did significant roof work with new roof units. We got rid of an atrium and et cetera and et cetera on there. And finally, now we're in the masonry stabilization project. We tore down the existing tower, and when we tore down the existing tower, we found where the previous construction and repairs required us to go and peel back a good portion of that roof. Every time they would take a shingle up, the contractor's requirement is, if you take a shingle off and you damage it, you got to replace it. When they went to replace it, that shingle does not exist anymore. So they were in a situation where that whole gutter line around the base of the building, all the hips and valleys need to be worked on, and the tower portion of it, we were starting to drastically run into more roof and not being able to replace it accordingly than what we had originally anticipated. I'll just drop down to item number three, where I state the proposed shingles are manufactured GAF in the Cool Color Series, and have a 40-year warranty. The shingles are rated by the Cool Color Rating Council and the Energy Star and meet their performance levels.
Information, this is a sample board for those shingles. And this is the particular shingle, if everybody can see. This comes as close to the color of the courthouse addition roof as possible. These are all constructed out of recycled products. They can be recycled upon repairing damage or next time you doing a roof on it. And once again, they're Energy Star qualified. So as we talked about at that, I believe at that March meeting, we talked about Russler putting together the bid packages, putting them out for the contractors. It was Advance, who is already under contract. It was Ed Kane Roofing, and it was, I believe, Noble and Black, who submitted bids to Kane on this. Dropping down to item number six, the cost. The original estimate to just do the shingle portion of the roof was $92,000 to $98,000. Rubber membrane roof was $40,000 to $45,000. So initial estimate ranging from $132,000 to $143,000. When the bids came in, the shingled roof with the Energy Star shingles came in at $75,615. The rubber membrane overlay came in at $20,286. The original bid cost to remove and put a new rubber membrane roof on there was approximately $40,000. In addition, I put on under item 6B3 is the flagpole. Now, the flagpole came about, what I'm proposing to you is the installation of a new 30-foot flagpole on the apex of the spire. And once again, the drawing that was accompanying the memo tonight on an 8.5 by 14 sheet depicts what that particular flagpole and flag would look like. The issue came about when we put with construction projects, iron workers put a flag up on the highest point of any construction project. If it's a short building, usually if there's a crane available, they put it up there. We received extreme amount of positive comment from the public and other individuals in local governments, and et cetera, on the fact that it was done, number one. And then the question became, is this going to be a permanent fixture on the spire? We didn't think too much about it over the wintertime, and then when it came springtime again, the questions started rising and the comments were continuing in from the public sector. So what we did is we just took a look at it and see what it would cost and what it would take to do it. So we came up with a 30-foot flagpole because one of the impressive features that people commented about was the size of the flag. When you're coming up the streets on Broadway or you're coming down Main, it is an imposing site. So the criteria for us to even consider this was that all operations for the flagpole would be internal to the spire. So any of us, we were to go up and change the flag or do anything on it, would be within the spire. We didn't want people on lanyards hanging out over the edges or any of those kind of scenarios that what people do in other areas. And so they came up with a manufacturer, I think they're called, their name is Bartol. They're out of Ohio, and they specifically craft flagpoles with internal operation. What I mean by that is, while the flag is flying, if you have to change it or do anything to it, you bring the flag down and it goes within the pole itself. They have done them for Disney World. I think Epcot Center has them, but they have the type that are electronically operated, whereby at 6 o'clock in the morning it comes up, and at 6 o'clock at night it unfurls itself. In this particular instance, it is a manual operation, but everything is within the spire. So we don't have to have a crane to change it and those kind of things that you would normally see with that. In the original project, we had a finial cap to put on top of the spire itself. And if you look at the drawing, if you look at this area right in here, where the lines are running across, that is a portion of the finial cap. What's missing from this particular item, because it would be removed, is the fleur-de-lis that is on top of it. So actually, we haven't gotten the estimates in yet, but this particular cap cost will be reduced. I guess I'll just move on to the recommendation. I recommend the County Facilities Committee accept a shingle roof replacement, EPDM coating, and the flagpole bid in the amount of $110,901. Accepting this change in work would be reflected in the change order to Rustler Construction Contract and set amount, and the funds currently are available in the Masonry Stabilization and Restoration Project budget. As we have commented before, and I think we'll probably have one more time with the architect and Kenny come and do a presentation to you, we do not believe there is an extenuating circumstance in that building. We believe we have passed, once we got past the southwest corner and the rebuilding of that, and we're not finding the same issues prevalent across the south side of the building, we believe we passed all the hidden issues.
The flagpole is at cost, and you indicated to me earlier today that Rustler and the steelworkers said that they would donate the labor?
That's correct. And Kenny is working with other trades to see if they want to contribute.
You have at your desk a memo that I got from Bruce Hannon on the issue of the flag, pointing out that other buildings, not only in our area but nationally, typically do not have a flag on the tower. Suggesting that it detracts from the tower, detracts from the project. I was copied on an email from Dennis Roberts today to the chair expressing his concern that we would put a flagpole on top of the tower. I also received an email today from Karen Coomer, who is the head of HACA, the Preservation Society, strenuously opposed to putting a flag on top of the tower, one of the themes of the criticism of this is that the Citizens Committee went out and raised money with the view of the courthouse as it was originally constructed in 1901, and people committed to give money to that project that way. As a matter of fact, I got a phone call from Jack Richmond basically questioning the same thing, and that now the county is materially changing the project by putting a flagpole on top of it, and that if that was what the case was, then that should have been in the original design that the Citizens Committee went out to raise money.
I'm also concerned about the fact that it was not on the agenda. The agenda says public replacement, and Mr. Hannon asked me if it was going to be on the agenda. I looked at the agenda and said, there's nothing on the agenda. So I don't think we should take action on that.
Okay. Well, I don't have any problem with that. I was going to vote. I actually was going to surprise everybody because I was going to vote against it.
So that we can move along with the question of the roof, which is on the agenda,
right.
That just be taken away.
Sure. We just separate the question. All right. So I think that's a good point, Mr. Weibel. And I'll entertain a motion to approve the bid for the replacement of the roof. $75,615 for the shingle roof and $20,286 for the rubber membrane overlay.
So moved.
Is there a second? Discussion.
I got some questions.
Go ahead.
Now, we're just talking about the old part of the courthouse that they're working on presently. That all has to be redone. Them are architectural shingles, which they're. I just did a big roofing job. We spent over $250,000 on that rubber membrane overlay. So you're talking about just going over what's presently there with new?
It's actually it's a GAF product, and you apply this.
Is there something down now they're going to go over?
Yes, there's a rubber membrane there. And
they're not going to remove it?
No, it's going to stay in place. And then what you do is you clean the current rubber membrane, make sure all the other materials are off it, as clean as possible. Then you come in and you apply this EPDM kind of liquid material. It adheres itself to the rubber membrane. And energy efficient-wise, that's what they're doing when you have an EPDM roof that's maybe starting to show wear and tear, and starting to leak and those kind of things. They put this particular product on top of it. It's like adding another layer of EPDM on it, and it has 10 to 15 year warranty on it.
Even if you're going over an existing, because most companies will tell you, just like shingles, if you overlay on top of other shingles, your warranty's null and void, basically.
No, this particular product does fit the warranty. And it, because it's GAF and the shingles are GAF, they've conferred to us this full fit place.
Well, as long as that's in writing, because I've dealt with that. And then they are going to strip where the shingles are at, they're going to strip down to the felt paper and relay all new felt paper, and hopefully the ice and dam paper has been inspected around the edges and all that stuff.
That's correct. We've done a considerable amount of it in the hits and valleys, and so now it's just the wider portions of the balance.
Does anybody, Alan, if I may, do you know how many squares they're talking about there, roughly?
No, I don't remember.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Sapp.
My question from the financial, it says that we have the money in the budget to do this. Where's, does that come out of what we have for the siding contingency?
That would be an owner's cost, yes. That would be an owner's cost.
And looking at the budget that we were presented tonight, what is left? And again, I think that you made the adjustments that we talked about before, but what specifically is left in contingency?
It should be in the third column at 389.
Oh, 369?
Yeah.
That's what's left in
contingency. That's
continue.
What's left in contingency.
And you talk about you think you're past finding any more issues, and really all the work being done on the south facade?
The tower in the south facade.
Because that's the most protected. Isn't there any concern when you start getting around to the north side where there's been more wind, rain?
We're done with the north side. We're done with the north side except going up the tower.
And the ashlar stone on the base.
Far north side of the building's totally done, all been touched.
Yeah, all the way up the third floor.
Oh, wow, okay, never mind. I'm behind time.
What we have to do there is just, if you notice, when you look at the tower and, let's say, 5 feet to the right of that tower, you notice the change in the color of the brick. Well, a lot of that will wash off. We have to put a water repellent, I won't call it a sealant, but I'll call it a repellent, on there at the end. But other than completing the tower and some ashlar stone replacement in those bands, we're done.
Mr. Smucker?
Do you have a sense of, or do you know what estimates are for using this the rubber membrane or these these Energy Star efficient shingles? Do you have a comparison of energy savings?
We tried to do that, and we tried to use a particular laboratory, and it's down in Tennessee. It's with hydroelectric condenser.
Oak Ridge.
Yes, Oak Ridge Laboratory. And because the only building that's close to that is located in Peoria, Illinois, it wasn't a true comparison. Courthouses are just coming on to Energy Star as a building that you can start using the data to compare to. The data that we came up with is we believe that it's between 9 and 11% utility cost savings once the roof project is completed and the other masonry. And that's all things being equal now, you know, as well as I do. Nobody can tell what that is. But on their brochures, they talk about a savings when you use the membrane in that particular area of about $3.50 per square, I think it's per square foot or something like that. That's the best information that we could give for this meeting.
Mr. Benson.
Denny, you probably said it, I missed it, but you mentioned the three firms that they went out to get bids from. Was Advance the low bidder on this one, too?
Yes. Okay. The advantage they had was the current setup. That setup money was already in Rosler's construction.
Sure. That's fine.
Chair Wyman.
According to the spreadsheet for the Masonry Stabilization Restoration Project, it said that 65% of the project is completed today. Can you say that 55% of the project is done?
Oh, we're more than 65. I believe we're at 75. There's a light on.
Mr. Jay.
We're replacing a roof that's only 14 years old, which is kind of unusual. Is this something we really need to do right now?
And only coming from it. And originally, I was thinking, well, why in the world do we have to do this? Then we went up there and we took a look at it, and the contractors that had to go across it on the other projects, they did their best. We created walkways and et cetera, but it the way the warranties say, the wear and tear, that's where they get you. If you never step on that roof, it should last 40, 50, whatever, 100 years, whatever those shingle warranties are. Once you start transgressing across it or doing any kind of work on it, it immediately starts to degrade. And that's what we ended up in. When you take those shingles off, they are so brittle that you can't take them off and repair. So the natural progression is, because we've done all this work, pretty soon you're going to start seeing the leaks. Then you're going to have to go up there and repair. Then you're going to have to go up there and try to repair the repairs. With the condition of the roof and with the discussions we've had, we would be lucky to get 3 more years out before you have to go up there and do it. Then you have to put all that staging cost back in, all that other costs that go along with it, and that's another $25,000.
Mr. James.
On that roofing job we just did, Jay, our shingles were only 17 years old, and we weren't on them very much at all, but with the extreme weather we've had, the winds, the sun just baked the heck out of them, all the granules wore off of them. We were having nail pop up through them. They were getting so thin, and I was just totally disgusted because of the warranty. And, of course, you can argue with that. We didn't want to fight the court battle and spend more money. But what he's saying is absolutely true. And if you don't do it now, the cost of that stuff has tripled from when I did roofing jobs before. I mean, due to the oil and everything else. So what I'm saying is, do you pay now or pay later? I just wanted to throw that into you.
I appreciate that. You'd think with all this money that we spent for specialists to look at it that we would have had it in the original budget.
Mr. Sam?
Just one last question, I guess, and now I can think about it because unfair advantage. Is there any risk that the bids were put out at a time where one company got an unfair advantage because they're already set up to do the work, and the other companies could come back to us potentially later and say they had an unfair advantage of $25,000?
I don't know.
Either firm could have gone to Kenny and made a proposal on using the existing scaffolding.
Okay. And that's fine. It doesn't bother me. It really seems like we're giving this firm
They came on site and reviewed the project.
Oh, okay. So this company
exactly
did this, did that.
Yes.
And went to him and said, you're going to use the scaffolding.
Right.
Okay. There you go.
I got a motion, right? I got a
mm-hmm.
second?
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Was there a manager to lose the flagpole?
Yep, there's no flagpole.
Okay, right. Does that have to come back?
Mm-hmm.
It can be a bit.
Okay. That. Radman Group report. Entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
We're ready.
Moved by Benson, second by Smucker. Discussion. We finally found the spot. The same spot that we've been getting in every report. We finally found it. Alan found it. He treated it. It is the spot. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. Is that right?
It is correct. It was verified days. Double check with the Radman Group to make sure that was the correct one, and they said yes, it was.
Okay. So you sent them a picture?
I did.
Okay.
How big was this spot? Just curious.
6-8 feet long, one corner of 1-2-4, about 6 feet. But the length, it was just basically where the 2-4 was cut off the edge of a tree. It was where the bark had been peeled. So it was just a small difference.
The inspector who was up there was 90 degrees off in there. Identifying the location. And it's easy to do when you're in an attic up there with the orientation of that building.
Okay. Want you to see, we got a ACEC award recognition letter for our sewer project.
Steve, don't you have to vote?
Do I have to vote on that? Oh, yeah. All those in favor accepting the Radman report?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Nope, we got an award letter. We don't get not too many things. People say nice things about us. It was nice for a change. So we'll note that. Update regarding Illinois Department of Public Health Life Safety Inspection Plan of Correction. Mr. Inman.
Yes, sir. On February 18th, our friends from the state came and visited the nursing home on a life safety inspection. The county, after the inspection, was notified of 9 issues. And the issues are thus. Number one was failed to provide plain spreaded rating documentation for walls, which is the fiberglass reinforced panels, the FRP. Find that in the kitchen, you find it in the utility closets. It's just the plastic wall covering, but they need to be fire rated in particular areas. Second item was failed.
Wait a second. So what about it? What are we doing?
Oh, sir. Okay. What we did there, what happened is he didn't actually look at the FRP in its installed locations. He took a look at the binder and manual that they give to the inspector. And in the haste of putting the binder together, Autobahn gave us the C rating, which is the non-fire rating, and put it in there. All the submittals we have, all the other paperwork during construction talks about the A rating. So they were deemed because they had the wrong paperwork. We have sent a sample off to an independent laboratory and are waiting for those test results. We're confident if Autobahn did, in fact, match up the paper, original paperwork and provided us with that, then we're okay. It's a unique item in the fact that when you flip it over, it doesn't say the product number or its fire rating or not fire rating. If, in fact, they didn't give us the right thing, it's Autobahn's responsibility to come on site and put the correct item on that. Item number two was the failure to maintain smoke barrier walls. After they peeled me off the ceiling on this one, we couldn't understand what this gentleman was talking about. It passed a licensure inspection in order for residents to, for us to get the license and occupy the building. We've gone through one additional life safety inspection in the same areas, talking about the same thing. This is a new inspector. He decided to pick one little item out of the NFP code. He failed to recognize there is an exception in the NFP code for this particular item. And what it is, in the Alzheimer's unit, if you remember, it's wing 4, and it's a long, long area. The way it was constructed is we put 2 layers of drywall on the roof. We put fire dampers in, smoke dampers in, etc. And when you do that, you do not have to go and create a fire or smoke barrier wall at every particular location because these other activities take care of it. He felt that we did not have the contiguous zones and met the letter of the code. He also found an area outside the kitchen in the same area. I asked Riley Glarum to come over and just take a look at the drawings and see what he thought compared to the code. He didn't understand where this gentleman was coming from.
Andrew, in the meantime, had talked to other people and said, well, you might as well just go ahead and you better go and fix it because they're going to make you do it. I stood back and said, no. The IDPH architects approved the design. They came on site and looked at this. And as long as it's constructed according to that design, we have to get out of jail card on this. So we went back and forth. To put a magnitude on this, I asked Kenny Rossler of Rossler Construction to go with Alan to go over and take and visit the site and see what it would cost to remedy their particular issue. $40,000 plus, and that's just on an estimate at this particular time. We could never get it done within the time frame that IDPH requires because of the cramped working spaces, and you have an Alzheimer's unit that is occupied. When you go to do this work, it is going to be very unpleasant for those residents because of the noise. That's the way they react to strange noises and et cetera. So there is a possibility that although it may cost $40,000 in an estimate on material, actually most of it's labor, you may actually have to maybe move some of these folks out to either nursing home, Alzheimer's unit, or another part of the facility. So we have requested Riley to meet with us again. He gave us a lowdown on how we can appeal this, and it's called through the Fire Safety Evaluation System, FSES, and IDPH has concurred with this. You ask an architect to go in and evaluate it. You take the plans, you take what is actually constructed, he inspects the site, and he writes a letter saying, no, they are in complete compliance with what the code says. He would do that in, on both zones, and then he needs to come back annually, stick his head above the wall, ask for documentation in case there's been any remodeling or any other work done with it, and he just confirms by letter that, no, that condition has remained the same, and basically it does never become an issue again for IDPH. We believe at this particular time that particular cost would be, and this is an estimate only based upon a 40 hour effort on Riley's part, would be about $5,000. So when you compare 40 versus 5, I think it's pretty much easy to see how we came up with that.
Where's Farnsworth? They're the architects on this. Why aren't they writing us the letters telling us we're fine? They're the nursing home specialists.
We have certain documentation that is there from Farnsworth during the design of that and that approach to it. I have reason to believe that we would get zero response from them, Steve. And quite honestly, I think in this particular instance, it's probably better to have another set of eyes.
We also had only about 48 hours to provide a plan of correction to IDPH, so we didn't have time.
Okay.
Item number three is failed to provide properly rated self-closing doors and walls to provide separation between hazardous areas and existing access. Basically, they were keeping doors open with a wooden box, so that was a no-cost change. They just stopped.
You know what I think? What's the committee's pleasure? I think what I'd like to do is defer this to the next meeting and have you actually give us that list so that we can read it ahead of time, and that way we have any questions. It's out. Your explanation seemed to make some sense, but I think it would help me if I saw it in writing.
Can I ask, is there anything that needs
immediate attention?
Attention from us, any further attention to what you've already done?
No, sir. We've sent the material off to the lab. We've had level a couple sidewalks, 15 slabs. That's already, I think, taken place today.
Starting today, yes.
And minimal cost, it was $2,000 for that. So, and the lab was 50 or 100, somewhere along in there, so we had an order of $2,100. The big ticket item is what I previously discussed with Barry.
Is that okay?
Yeah, fine as long as.
All right. Ilias, recommendation for amendment to Ilias lease to exercise option to reopen her for August 2010-2011. Mr. Emmond.
For the shortness, basically what they want to do is prepay another additional year. They'll be paying $300,000 in that. And what difference in this payment from previous lease is that this will include the utilities. So they're extending the lease by 1 year and they're prepaying, which obviously helps the county coffers.
they're paying the utilities?
Yes, sir.
This includes the utilities.
Yes.
The $300,000 includes.
It includes the
utilities. We will pay the utilities bills as they come in. This is to pay rent and utilities for 1 year.
Yes. Moved by Bensel, second by Smucker. Discussion?
I just ask why. Why do they want to do that?
They want the security of knowing they're going to have an additional year.
Okay.
Jim has done a great job of hoarding his money away when he gets this type of thing, and it's all for getting them in the frame of mind that this is a permanent facility, not just.
Mr. Sapp?
Just ballpark, if you know what the difference between how much of that 300 is going to go for utilities and what we actually come out in rent from the contract?
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, y'all, it's 120.
Approximately, yeah. For utilities.
Right.
Okay, cool.
And the issues that would raise those utilities drastically, we have no control over.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That's a board item, isn't it? Right, okay. Physical plant, we've got the monthly reports at our desk. Alan, anything special about the monthly reports?
No, there is not. Not at this time.
Questions about the monthly reports? Motion to approve or to receive and place on file?
So moved.
Moved by Weibel, second by James. All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Ameren reassignment letters. Mr. Inman?
We received a couple emails from Ameren, and I believe the intent of their emails was to recoup market share from those folks who have joined the consortium. And shortly thereafter, upon receiving them, we received a email from the consortium, which I believe is in the packet, indicating that it is not such a good deal because we would have to pay penalties for removing ourselves from the consortium.
So 6364 is the email?
Yes, sir. I believe I have either stated at the department heads meeting or in our last facilities meeting that the City of Champaign and Energy Reduction Review was taking a look at this, whether it's to remain part of the consortium or do an early out, and then also take a look at whether they would sign up again for the consortium. In my conversation with city officials, they are not going to be removing themselves from the consortium, but we'll keep the option open of whether they're going to renew and then explore it. And I think that's June of next year. We have to face that situation.
So, do you or Deb, do you have any recommendation about this consortium issue? Do you think we should stay? I mean,
at this point in time, for the next 12 months, yeah, I don't have an alternative to offer at this point.
And if you didn't, you'd have to work with another large group to get the appropriate savings that you would get from a consortium type buying.
Questions? So there's no action for us to do.
That's
all right, energy policy.
As I believe I've reported in the past, we were undertaking an opportunity to reduce our utility costs. We had a presentation made by a representative from the University of Illinois, CDAC group, and this is our first go-around trying to do some of those items. The energy plan had been provided to you in a draft form at the last time. You're on pages 69 through 71, you see what the department had comments were. I believe I made the corrections to the policy that committee members had talked about, and so I believe the policy is here for your final action.
Is there a motion to approve the energy policy?
So moved.
Moved by Smucker.
Second.
Second by Bensel. Discussion.
On page 73, I have a hand up. I didn't know if you saw it.
Yes, I couldn't see Mr. Bensel's head was in the way. That's okay.
On page 73, 8G, employees are encouraged to follow good energy practices unless individual appliances. But I thought we were going to do away with that.
individual appliances because of the...
And disagree, I thought we had discussed that as well, but it would just be...
Eventually the county, I think Deb mentioned something about we would have to provide refrigerators and other things, but I just think that's a nightmare, and if we keep using wording like that, I mean, where are we going to ever draw the line?
Comment. I think that there's certain things, very low energy use things that make an office nice. Personally, I don't use the candles and that kind of stuff, but I can understand why people want that sort of stuff. So I think there has to be some sort of a balance there. The thing that kills us is the personal heaters and stuff like that. The problem with the candles is both. It's both a safety issue to some extent, but also, yeah, I mean, you're right. They do use energy, but, I was thinking about this after we talked last time, and it just seemed like there is. We got to give a little bit of leeway for the fact that people spend 8 hours a day in these rooms, and they want to make them comfortable in some way. I'm not going to define for people what comfortable means exactly, but I don't know. So that's my thought on it. That I do feel like we need to give some leeway.
Mr. Jay,
I can't believe there's a good reason on the face of this earth to have candles in a building. There's no good reason. Period.
These are these plug-in candles, right? That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, these are not burning candles.
They're not burning candles. They're
some of the other ones were burning candles.
Yeah, right. Some of them were.
Oh, okay.
But some
well, I agree with you on that.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
But I appreciate your point, but I think that at some point we as owners of the facilities need to draw some lines.
The personal, I'm sorry. The meltdown personal candles. I mean, we have one at home, and my wife has one in her office. But so I'm not as opposed to those, the burning candles, but it needs to be identified that it is the whatever those are called, electric meltdown candles.
Electric candles.
Candles, because that leads are encouraged to be careful when using those. We don't want to be using candles, burning candles. And maybe most people would realize that. And I will only accept that as if they're on a motion sensor,
right,
where when they're gone for a period of time, that stuff shuts off.
Well, that's
the question again, though, becomes who's going to pay for the motion sensors? I think we had that discussion before. If they bring this in, are they required then to get their own motion sensor strip to have in the office, or how are we doing that?
Mr. James?
Well, I thought I suggested last time and that is a good point, I agree, but I've worked jobs where you either do this or you don't, and they've got rules because they're there for a reason, but we could have a central supply office, the county could buy the materials, and if the employee wants it, they would have to buy it from us, whether it be a space heater or lease it or however they want to work it out, but from what I'm understanding, everybody's got this and that. There's fire safety, if one did short out, who's liable, the county? It comes into play all the time, and that's what worries me. So there has to be something to where, like, we say, okay, we've got these space heaters, they're energy rated. Yes, the department head has said you qualify for one, we'll sign off on it, or however you want to work it. But willy-nilly, this is just crazy.
I agree.
Okay, I still don't feel from the discussion that we like the wording of this yet. And I'm wondering if I automatically inserted the word electric in front of candles just in light of what you said. And then I was going to put a comma here that said, if utilized, the device will be connected to motion-activated sensor, comma, at employee cost.
He brings up a good point. If it's not UL rated or whatever, and bring it in, it catches on fire, and it's not our appliance.
Provided by county at employee cost? So are we ready for this? Or
no, we're not ready for this.
Moved as first.
Second. Just a second. There's a motion to defer by Bensel, second by James. Discussion.
Well, I actually have another thing, issue I wanted to raise.
Have to do with the motion to defer?
No, it doesn't have to do with the motion.
Okay.
Well, it has to do with the original motion.
Well, so, but that's not what's on the floor right now.
Your point being is you don't want to defer because you want to discuss this more.
Well, I have one more thing I'd like to add to it because...
Well, the motion on the floor is a motion to defer. Do you have any comment on the motion to defer?
No.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, show of hands. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. Passes. You'll get to say it next meeting. Okay, so that was that. Now we're down to delamping for the courthouse. Mr. Inman.
Going back to the presentation in our statement in the deferred policy of attempting to reduce utility costs by 50 cents per square foot, we came up with we committed to and provided you a delamping plan for the courthouse complex. What we did is I went through and I audited in the best form that we could the number of fixtures that are currently in place in the courthouse, identifying possible fixtures that can be delamped, identifying security fixtures, and you will see that in the attached, and I'm just going to use one sheet here. This particular sheet, which is the first floor of the courthouse.
Okay.
The one with the red and green dots on it. And the way that we interpret this is simply the green are the security lamps and ballast. Those are on typically 24/7, 365. The red are the lamps that would remain operational after delamping. Now, in the plan on page 115, I give you a very broad definition of delamping, because if you take a look at it out on internet sites and Energy Star and etc., it is a very broad broad process, and it can include removing one or more lamps from a fixture, replacing the total number of light fixtures in a given area on a 3-4 basis, which I believe the gentleman from CDEC discussed. Electrically disconnecting the light fixture, the ballast, from operation by leaving the fixture in place, replacing the existing lamps with lower wattage lamps. Light fixtures which are not energy efficient upon failure will be replaced with energy efficient fixtures. That pertains primarily to Brookings Administrative Center, and then adding occupancy sensors to restrooms, conference rooms, etc. The way this would work is initially we would come through, I would meet with elected and appointed department heads, and we would go through this plan, and we'd actually go and take a look at offices, corridors, etc., and say, this is what the plan would somewhat indicate. We would go in and we would do all the delamping and ultimate delamping by removing the ballast from the system in accordance with all the building codes that were proposed, etc. We could only delamp when the affected department, County Facilities Committee, and administration are in agreement with the delamping plan. So we're not forcing it down the throat. We're trying to figure out, taking from this initial approach to it, what operationally works for them. And if you take a look, it's not really on that page, but when we have quite a few number of offices, the judges included, who have perimeter offices that also have windows. So in those particular offices, you can maybe delamp a little bit more than you would on an interior workspace. So taking that in mind, that is where I come up with on these particular pages. We would take and use a light candle measurement pre-delamping. Then upon delamping, we would come back and do another measurement to make sure that we're within the Illuminating Engineers Society of North America, EPA Energy Star Program, GSA Courthouse Lighting Guidelines, and the State of Illinois Courtroom Guidelines. State of Illinois Courtroom Guidelines, I believe, are circa 1963, so they are pretty much useless. But I put them down here because they identify in those rooms that are particular concern to the State of Illinois. So once we've done all that, we're pretty much done with that particular part of it. The electrical folks in the physical plant will have to come back on the second phase and actually undo the electrical wiring, because there is current that goes to the ballast, and that is an energy cost. But that would not be done until the officials, the department officials, myself or Alan go through with them, and we report to you that, okay, everybody agrees that this particular delinking plan would work, and then we would just update the plans to show where it's at. What typically happens with this, and I'm going by two studies. One was the University of California, Santa Barbara, and there was another California institution that did it. There is a tendency, once energy issues are handled, to go back and start adding lights. Well, the reverse takes place. If there's a request to add lighting to a conference room or something, you would just reverse it. The elected and appointed official would write a memo to Deb to say, hey, we need more lighting in here, something has changed. In turn, she would work with whomever and bring it to county facilities, and everybody would agree. That kind of information that you would get is you'd have light candles and all that kind of stuff.
So, county facilities agenda item would be more lights in the state's attorney's conference room?
Could be, yeah. I mean, if you want
that's to. That's a kind of micromanagement that's a little beyond what I envisioned for this committee.
You are talking about a significant amount of money here.
I understand.
And when you delamp, you're going down a.
Why can't we delegate that to the county energy officer?
Because there will be reporting monthly on your energy savings.
So we appoint Alan as the county energy officer. Get him the background and training.
And it doesn't come with a pay raise.
Doesn't that make more sense than to bring something like that to us?
Yeah. Typically, universities use building proctors, and they handle the same thing.
A building proctor? Okay.
In that case, would we get a report, sort of a general report on the,
yes.
on the progress of
yes.
it?
Yes.
I think what you'll see is the initial delamping, you'll see a reduction in utilities. Then once again, when you take those other ballasts off, you'll see an additional reduction. And hopefully, everything staying equal, it will stay that way for.
Mr. Benson.
I know that we heard this information, but what you talked about the significant cost factor. What's the payback on this?
Because I bought into Mr. Spolinski's approach of not quoting wattages or anything, the payback on this is the 50 cents per square foot savings, ultimately.
I'm talking about from a, is it 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? How long does it take us to recoup our costs? Understanding that energy costs will fluctuate.
Right.
But
because you're using employees who are already on the payroll, I think you don't have any costs. That's my approach to it.
Okay, now I'm confused because you just told us there was significant cost to it.
Savings.
I thought you said. So. I thought you said.
I
thought you
okay.
No, I thought you meant savings.
Okay.
I thought you meant savings.
Then I misheard you. Thank
yeah.
you. But that makes more sense.
We're not contracting this out to a contractor to come in and delamp. We're doing
okay.
it all internal.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to say that this is great. When I got my packet and I saw all this stuff in here,
I thought your eyes would light up.
Yeah, and I just feel like you really took the initiative on this and moved this ahead.
Well, what do we have to do to the policy to put that administrative energy person? You know, what do we have to do to change what you've given us so that it isn't? You know, when you delamp, I can understand that process going down, and I assume it would all be presented to us at one time.
Do we need a motion to reconsider, to rediscuss the policy?
Can I make a real simple suggestion?
Sure.
It's done. Just by your comments.
Okay.
You'll see it when it comes back.
Okay. So you want us to approve this delamping proposal for the courthouse. Is that right?
Yes, that's what I would like to leave tonight with, but I think Mr. Sapp has some other comments.
I'll make a motion to rediscuss the energy policy. I can't.
No. You're on the wrong side.
It has to be done.
Yeah. Okay, next time. We'll get it. So could you build that in?
Yes, sir.
Could you build that in for next time?
Yes, sir. I want you to build in.
Yeah. Well, then just talk to him.
Just talk to him.
That's fine. Or send a memo to all of us, you know, if you want us to read it before we come to the meeting. The co-session minutes, Dave DeThorne says, that there is a proper basis to keep all the closed session minutes that are closed, facilities closed.
So moved.
Mr. J moves, there a second?
Second.
By James. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. There's something else I was going to say. Oh, when I looked at the minutes, I haven't said anything to Jenny Putman yet, but we did discuss generally having her picture in that room. Is there anyone, I'm not asking for action, but is there anyone that has strong opposition to that? I was going to make arrangements to have a...
Will it be when she was in her 20s or the...
What I thought I would do is get a couple shots.
Well, there you go.
And bring them to the meeting and see what
that
I thought.
That is a fake effort.
Okay. Consent agenda. I show the Ilias lease pass. Does somebody want that on the regular agenda to let the world know? If not, it's on the consent agenda. Art in the Plaza had a no vote. Proposed easement had a no vote. And the conceptual approval doesn't go to the board. Without objection, we're adjourned. And Mr. J, we discussed the corner at Highway. We had no money, and motor fuel funds could not pay for it. So we remember that?
Maybe. We discussed it, didn't we?
We did.
What is the facility?
We did discuss it. Hey, John, we discussed it when we talked about reusing the nursing home, too.
Yeah, we did.
Well, we didn't have any money.
Well, we still don't have any money.
I know.
That's the thing. That's the change.
Thank you. Now my wife is here calling me saying,